One of my favorite musicals is The Phantom of the Opera. I love the way it begins. It's so dramatic. But regardless of whether you've ever heard The Phantom of the Opera or not, there's one song in Phantom that I have particularly found fascinating. And I find in many secular songs, people stumble onto tremendously deep spiritual truths without necessarily knowing that they've stumbled onto them. There's one song in Phantom which is called The Music of the Night. And by the way, if you go looking for it, I've never been able to, I've never researched this, but the song has two variations, and the line that I'm going to quote is in one variation and not on the other one. But nevertheless, it's in that song. The song is called The Music of the Night, and trust me, I'm not going to sing it for you. But here's the line that I would like to focus my attention on. The Phantom, just to set it up, the Phantom is in love with an opera singer. And he lives in the rafters and in the upper crevices of an old opera house, which has both rooms up in the attic and also caverns below. And so, and actually it turns out that he is a former opera singer who, through some accident, his face was heavily disfigured, especially on one side. And so he always is aware that when people see him, it inspires horror. And so he wears a half a mask on one side of his face. You might have seen that in the promos. And it's a white mask that he wears in half of his face. And he has retired into the recesses of this opera house, and he never is seen, but he knows all the nooks and crannies of the attic and of the subterranean parts. He's living there when he hears the song, the singing of a young opera singer. And as he hears her singing, he falls deeply in love with her, and he listens to her, and he is trying slowly to speak to her without her being seeing him. And at first, of course, she thinks she's going crazy, and she thinks her father is speaking to her from beyond the grave, because she's hearing a disembodied voice. But really, it's this crazy guy speaking to her from the rafters. And in one of the songs, the Phantom, and you have to remember, the Phantom is crazy. He is a crazy guy. He's wacko. But there's an old saying that was said by a great poet, and I'm forgetting the name of the poet right now, but this is the key to interpret what I'm about to do. The key is something foolishly said can be wisely heard. Something foolishly said can be wisely heard. That's why periodically, you know, you hear a child say something and you go, oh, she does not know the truth that she has spoken, because they didn't say it realizing the depth of what was saying. So something foolishly said can be wisely heard. The phantom at one moment sings a song to his beloved, and he's trying to convince her to let go of living in the regular world and to come and live with him in the darkness, and where he lives in the subterranean parts. And so as he woos her, one of the songs and one of the lines he sings is this. He says to her, close your eyes, for your eyes will only tell the truth. And the truth isn't what you want to see. In the dark, it is easier to pretend that the truth is what it ought to be. I'm going to say it one more time. Close your eyes, for your eyes will only tell the truth. And the truth isn't what you want to see. In the dark, it is easier to pretend that the truth is what it ought to be. Now, that is something said by a madman who is trying to convince that young lady to join him in the darkness. But if you listen to that line with Christian ears and just change a little bit of the words, you begin to see actually the meaning of Lent. Ah, you are going, what in God's green earth is Father doing? This is actually the meaning of Lent. So let's go there. First of all, let's take apart that line. Why is it important? Why does he say to her, close your eyes, for your eyes will only tell the truth? Don't you want to see the truth? Actually, he says, and the truth is not what you want to see. Why is he saying that to her? Let me ask you this question, just from your experience. What do most people do when they begin praying? What do you do to your eyes? You close them, right? When you're praying, most of the time, people close their eyes. Why? Why is it a normal practice to close your eyes when you're praying? It's a rhetorical question. You don't have to answer it. The reason you close your eyes when you're praying is that you are seeking to shut down an aspect of the truth. You see, truth has qualities. Truth has superficiality, and truth has depth, D-E-P-T-H. What is the superficiality of truth? Sense data. All the stuff that's coming to you through your senses. We all have our eyes open. What is happening with your eyes is that you are being bombarded with all the sense data of people moving, of colors. You are being bombarded all kinds of places. And not only your eyes, but your ears too. There's a constant bombardment of all kinds of sense data. And when you want to pray, you first close your eyes, but then you try to go to a quiet place. Again, why quiet? Because you're trying to shut down the sense data. Now, is the sense data, both the sense data that you hear and that you see, is it true? Yes, it is true. When I open my eyes, I see you out there. You exist. But in order for me to pray, I have to block you out. And so I close my eyes to block you out. And I may go to a room and close the door to block other noise out. So now I'll go back to what this crazy man just told you. Close your eyes, for your eyes will only tell the truth. He means the superficial truth. And the superficial truth isn't what you want to see. That is correct. If you want to access the deeper level of truth, you got to shut down the superficial level of truth. In the dark, he goes on, it is easier to pretend that the truth is what it ought to be. Now, analyze that sentence. You see, when he says in the dark, it is easier to pretend, the phantom does not have any sense of faith. He can't see with the eyes of faith. So since he's crazy and he doesn't have eyes of faith, all he has is eyes of pretend. Notice that the truth is what it ought to be. You see, the phantom knows that something has got to be deeper in life than just sense data. If you live your life constantly, sense data constant all the time, you feel empty. After a while, you just got to shut it down. That's why nature invented sleep. Because you got to shut it down. Otherwise, you're going into sensory overload. The truth is not only sense data that you can touch. The truth has depth. And in order for you to access the depth of the truth, you gotta focus on it and take your focus off of the sense data. And the only way you can do it is by shutting down sense data. The phantom knows that there ought to be an aspect of truth that is deeper than just what you see and hear. And so he says, close your eyes, for your eyes will only tell you the superficial truth. And the superficial truth is not what you want to see. In the dark, it is easier, and I'm going to change the words, it is easier with the eyes of your faith instead of pretend. With the eyes of your faith, to see what the truth really ought to be. Instead of ought to be, substitute what it actually is. You see, the phantom wants faith. He sees that something in human life is crying out that there be more than just stuff. There's gotta be more than stuff. And it ought to exist. So where is it? And so he can't see it, so he thinks it's pretend, when it's actually the deepest part of truth. Because truth has depth. And that is what he's asking her to do in a very perverted way. Because he thinks that it can only be accessed in the basements. It cannot be accessed in real life. Now the Phantom, that part of that song in the Phantom, it makes me feel sorry for the man. Because he really is looking for a sense of meaning and a sense of love in this perverted desire with relationship with this opera singer. But what he is seeking is something that all of us are seeking. All of us are seeking. At first, all of us are happy with sense data. All of us are happy with the glitz of life. But after the glitz of life gets going, you start saying, there's got to be more to this. There's got to be more. Because your heart just doesn't get satisfied with the daily grind. I think I've shared with you before years ago I went to John Paul II school, and I had to do an all school mass. And I don't remember why, but the reading was from a book of Ecclesiastes, and in the book of Ecclesiastes it said, there is a time for this and a time for that and a time for this and a time for that. And it was an interesting reading. It's a very philosophical reading. So I asked the entire school to get at the meaning of this reading. How many of you have ever ridden a carousel? How many of you have ever ridden on a carousel? And of course, the whole school, yes, I've ridden in a carousel. And then I said, okay, great. How many of you enjoyed the carousel? Right? And this time about two-thirds of the kids, yay, I enjoy the carousel. Is that right? Carousel's the little horses going up and, you know, like, okay. And then I asked, how many of you would like to live permanently on a merry-go-round or a carousel? Permanently, just move in. And this time, it was only the little kids. The pre-K and the K went, yay! Let's do it! And so I went to the eighth graders, who were by this time, they were all, they were grumbling. And I said, the little kids are super excited about moving into the merry-go-round. Why aren't you? And one of the kids says, oh, Father, it doesn't go anywhere. And it drives you crazy after a while with all that music and all those horses going up and down. It just drives you crazy. It's nothing. It doesn't go anywhere. And yet the little kids, I asked them, why do you love it? It's so much fun, yes. I love the horses going up and down and the music and all of that. Now think about this. That's you and me. You see, the older the kids got, the more they sensed that the sense data that was impressive to all the little kids was boring to them. The little kids were satisfied. Why do you think when you go up to a baby and the baby's laying down there, you can take some sort of some jangly and go, and the little baby goes, yeah, and he laughs, right? Now try going up to your wife, going,
doesn't work, does it? Why doesn't it work? Because, what is that? Been there, done that, bought the t-shirt. Right? What happens when you grow as a human being? And this is the way God designed you. God designed you to get bored. You're supposed to get bored with things that you're not supposed to be enjoying at that level anymore. It's okay as a little baby. But the older you get, the more you get bored. I never will forget when I went to visit my nieces. And they took me to, my nieces are older now, they're in their 20s. And they took me to, it was in Baltimore, but there was somewhere, there was a nightclub that had a gambling casino. And it was all the glitch. You couldn't tell what time it was outside. It was an overload of sense data. The glitz and the ding, 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 you know, of all the money and all that stuff. And they were really into it, and there was dancing, and there was all kinds of lights, and they were called, "Oh, Uncle Mario, isn't this fantastic?" I was bored to tears. Bored to tears. What do I get out of all these colors and standing and sitting before a machine going and watching little balls go around? Bored. Why? I'm supposed to be bored. I'm 65 years old. The way that God built you, He built you so that after a while, and it's different way, different time frames for different people, you're going to be bored. And you're going to have the experience of saying, there's got to be more. And some people don't ever look for more. So you know what they do? They start trying to anesthetize the hunger for more. And so what they do is they try more, and they think, oh, more money, more stuff, more travel, more, when they don't realize that it's the more inside that's deeper. Or they start, you know, boozing it up so that the need for more sort of is put down and you can get drunk and not have to experience the pain. Or you start using drugs and you start breaking in. What a friend of mine used to call using dope spiritual burglary. And it is, because what you're seeking is correct. You want more, but instead of seeking it, you're just shooting up and trying to get it chemically. So, what is Lent all about? Look at that picture of Jesus. Jesus with the desert. That is the equivalent of closing your eyes. What is present in the desert? Nothing. There is nothing in the desert. It's constantly the same. So when Jesus goes into the desert, what does he go to do? He goes to remove all visual and audible distractions. Why? Because he needs to concentrate on something deeper inside himself. And that's what he's doing. He realizes that he's about to be called into a ministry, and he's changing patterns of life. And before he changes a pattern of his life, he needs to get in touch with the person who is at the deepest level of his personality. And throughout his entire life, you will see Jesus slipping out of the crowd and going to what the Bible calls a lonely place. Because once again, Jesus is needing to get in touch with the center that is not found amidst the noise and the clatter. Even the night before he died, Jesus goes and he leaves his apostles behind and he goes to be by himself in the dark. And because he needs to refocus. Folks, that's what this 40 days is about. It's not about giving up something silly. It's not about that. I still remember when I was a little kid, I used to give up chocolate. And I used to think that God just was very pleased with me suffering with no chocolate, you know, looking at me and going, "Oh, look at how my servant Mario is suffering with no chocolate." That was stupid. And then, of course, at the end of Lent, I would go to Walgreens and buy the mother of all solid chocolate bunnies. And then I would come on Easter Sunday and I'd eat the whole dad burn thing. And then I'd vomit. And of course, God would be up there going, "Oh, look at my servant, Mario. He is puking in my name. Isn't that wonderful?" Stupid. Stupid. What does God want from you? He wants you to go somewhere. He wants you to spend some time with your eyes closed. He wants you to spend some time somewhere where you can look inside yourself and see what's going on. When you can stop living among the confusion of life, where you can get in touch with the deepest part of the truth that is inside you. That's what Lent is about. It's not about giving up stuff. It's about learning who you are. And so, folks, as we move in this first Sunday of Lent, got a long ways to go, build something into it. Make some adjustments in your life. Make sure you have some time alone, some time that you can access the deepest parts of the truth in yourself. Don't live a life that is unexamined. As Socrates said, the unexamined life is not worth living. It's empty. Look for the deepest part of you. Connect with the Spirit of God that is in the deepest part. And the Spirit of God is the one who makes you who you really are. You might discover a different self than you thought. God bless.